Welcome to another episode of Greenwald and BC's podcast, What the Builder Knows. And with me today, I have a realtor for you, Shelley Kimmerling with Coldwell Banker Mount Pleasant Realty, correct?
Yes.
All right. So Shelley's an expert in her field. And Shelley, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you come to be an expert.
So I have been in this community a long time. I became a realtor in 2015, joined Coldwell Banker, really kind of jumped in the deep end in 2016 and haven't looked back. I got involved in our association right away. I'm very big on education, so I think that's a strong point for me. I always think there's more to learn, and I never assume I know everything about the industry that I work in. And so I've gotten several accreditations for a buyer specialist, a seller specialist, negotiations, pricing. I've been involved in the board of directors. I went through 6 years on the board of directors. Very interesting time because I got to be president-elect in 2020 when we got shut down.
COVID.
And I was president in 2021. We were still coming out of a lot of the shutdowns. I'm not afraid to take a risk, and I think that's what's helped me become successful in my job. I'll do things that sometimes other agents aren't willing to do, and it might be shovel a driveway. It might be my real claim to fame is I climbed down a roof and helped scrape some moss off so
that's
that we could get
job.
It to Boston underwriters. Well, there weren't any builders out there at 9 o'clock at night. I've been in crawl spaces under manufactured homes to get serial tags because something wasn't done right when it was set down. So I think that has led me to a lot of the success. I've also worked in an established business here where I made a lot of contacts. I'm an old girl, but per se, even though I'm new to real estate. So I've been in Mount Pleasant since 1987.
So, yeah, Mount Pleasant Realty's obviously been around a while, and it's always good to join a firm that has a lot of other people that are great to learn from, be mentored by, and get a lot of contacts. So what I heard a lot there is you're very involved and that you care a lot. And those two things are what makes people, I don't care what profession you're talking about, makes you relevant and makes you very focused on the client you're serving, whatever you're serving. So I have a few questions for you today.
Okay.
How's that?
Yep.
So what the builder knows tries to just educate, entertain, and inform. And we bring on experts to try to help update our community on current events, things that are happening. And so I'm going to pick your brain about a lot of things that might be realtor happenings. So if I'm a buyer, what do I got to do to get prepared? Like I've heard it's kind of competitive out there to be a buyer right now. What should I do if I'm thinking of becoming a buyer? What do I do first to make sure I'm ready to be a buyer when I start looking?
The first thing you do is talk to a lender. Absolutely. You need to make sure your credit score is in place so that you can be competitive. You need to make sure you're shopping in the right price range and know what your budget can be so that when you come to me, we can start looking and we can be aggressive when we get ready to write an offer. If we have to wait for a letter of qualification, we may miss the bidding opportunity.
So, like how long do I have today? I know things have been a little slower than they were previously, but it'll pick back up here as spring approaches. How long do I have usually? How long are houses setting? I mean,
you're going to have maybe 48 hours if you're in the right price range. So there's a very hot price range right now that are going in 24 hours.
Like what are those? What's that?
That is about 175 to 325.
So what average families can afford.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So not your really high end, not your low, you know.
No.
So not the ones that need a ton of work. These are the mostly move-in readies.
Yes. And you have to be there. For example, two doors down from me, and I live here in Mount Pleasant. A house went on the market about 6 weeks ago. On a Wednesday, Thursday morning, they canceled all other showings.
Got it.
It was done. If you're not ready with that pre-qual letter, you can't even write an offer.
So, I mean, I've always thought it's right for people to buy when it's ready for them. Don't buy what you're not ready for. You know,
yes.
There's a whole life lesson on that. But so, if you think it's your family's time to buy, change, move, whatever, then see your lender, get your house in order, make sure when you call on that first showing, when you flipping through realtor.com, you see the house you want, whatever. When you make that call, you could say yes this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
Yes.
You need to be ready for that if you're in that 170,
yep,
320 range. Perfect. So say I get a house and I'm like, well, I think I want it. So we write an offer. That's what you do. And then there's an inspection process, right? So
yes,
tell
there
me
is.
About that.
I always encourage an inspection. Buyers have the right to waive it. I don't encourage that. We want to go in and look at, and the things you can't see when you walk through the house.
Sure, you can see the carpet. You can see if the door's falling off. You can see if a window needs... I mean, you can see
yes.
some of that.
And right? So that's how I coach my clients. When we go to an inspection, we want to know what's going on in the crawl space because nobody ever goes in their crawl space. Right. We want to know what's going on in the attic. Do they have bats? Do they have mold? Has there ever been a fire? Those are all things that sometimes they find afterwards, and we've written the offer. And I encourage them to look at safety items that are damaging. And if a good inspector will ask you what kind of financing you have, because there are things that some types of financing won't allow and some will. So we work together as a team to pull that all together. And then we ask for those things that we need to have fixed or
so,
a price reduction.
So we write an offer and we say contingent upon an inspection. Yep. The inspector comes 3, 4, or 5 days, whenever you can get the inspector. And then we have a day to look at that and say, you know, okay, we'll continue to buy it if you fix these things. Or maybe nothing's wrong. I mean, sometimes nothing's wrong. So, all right, well, let's flip on the other side. So I'm a seller and I want to sell my home. I'm thinking I need to sell my home or it's time for me to sell my home. I sold a home that we had lived in for 18 years last year. I raised my family there. We did a pre-sell inspection. Mm-hmm. So I hired a local guy here. David Roman was his name. Yep. He came in, inspected my home. And I did that. So I had built a house and I thought it's a pretty good house, but I knew that David could find something wrong. And if so, let's get rid of all the objectionable pieces first. And he found a couple things, which, you know, plumber's toilet never gets serviced, right? Builder's house is the same way. So David told me the 2-3 things that people are going to look at. So we took care of them. So by the time that we ever listed and got an approved offer, they did their inspection too. There was nothing. Right. Perfect. You know? So there's the inspection is a protection piece, right? Kind of like any other piece. So you guys always say you should do that. And are inspectors still really busy? Is it hard to get them or?
They're not as busy right now because we are in a slower period of time. I believe that the inspector's worth every penny. So an inspector could be $300 to $400 depending on the square footage of your house.
Sure.
And that could save you $10,000 down the road because they found a problem that you were able to negotiate to get fixed. Or it's a $300 peace of mind that you don't have a problem in there that's going to catch you. And I believe in pre-inspections. It's not always easy to convince sellers to do those. But it is an easier path to close and sell when there aren't a lot of hurdles to jump over in the middle of the negotiations.
And it takes some of the stress out. So you might into it knowing like, the inspector says my roof's about time. Well, I know that. And so I know I'm either going to negotiate for it or price it appropriately. Right?
Exactly. And the other thing for a seller is that they may be very qualified, know how to do what the inspector finds. Maybe it's switch out a light.
So they could take care of those
things. They can take care of it. If they wait until they're in the middle of a contract, that inspection request may come back that they have to have a licensed professional do it.
Right.
Even if it was something they knew how to do,
right.
It won't be acceptable. And you have to provide
depending
a receipt.
On the financing, sometimes the financing requires, right. We've been a piece
and
of some
be,
of those.
And it will be ultimately cost them more to do the same thing. And it's frustrating for the seller.
So in our case where there was dual inspections in the house, it wasn't a waste of money.
No. Not at all.
Where both parties were protected by their own. I mean, we actually offered our inspection report and said, you're welcome to look at it, mm-hmm. but by all means, if you want another one. And they did. They took another one, and good for them. And it all worked out.
It's really buyer beware.
Sure.
For that.
Sure. So you said it's a little slower now. Now, it's, in my opinion, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it's a little slower because there's not the inventory, and then the rates have went a little higher, which put some people on the sidelines.
Yes.
But it's not like houses aren't still moving. Right.
No, houses are moving. It's
right.
It is really because they're when they come up, they don't have a lot of competition, and you might have 10 or 12 buyers looking for each one of those houses, and it gets a little crazy.
So it's a supply side issue still.
It is. And right. and the rates are a good example. March numbers were down. We might have to put a perspective. We have about 200 agents in just our association. A year ago in March, we sold 80 houses. 2024, we sold 54. That's a lot of agents with nothing going on.
Right.
And it was pre-rate increase in 2023. The market hadn't really hit that 6.5 to 7. So we really see it as we're moving forward now. I think things will level out comparison-wise as we get to July and August because the rates are now more comparative.
Sure.
So it was pretty slow.
So let's talk about that. Rates are slightly ticking down. They've stopped raising. They're slightly ticking down. Mm-hmm. The forecast is to continue dropping down. Now, our economist at Homebuilders says his basic slogan is 5% in 25. He thinks we'll get not to 5%, but in the fives at 25. Do you feel that way too?
That's what we're hearing. Yep. We originally heard we would see a cut in the first quarter. That's now been moved to the end of the second quarter,
right.
And we'll see what happens.
Things are supposed to be too good. Is there still less houses on the market than needs to be?
Absolutely.
So if you're in a position to think you want to sell a house, I mean, if you're downsizing, if you're thinking of moving into a condo, whatever it is, this is not a bad time to sell.
It's a great time to sell.
The problem is if you need to replace it with the same like thing.
Yes.
Right. So just think about that. It's a great time to be a seller if it's appropriate for your family. Now, I shot my mouth off the other day. How many times does realtors or you say that average families move in their lifetime? How many buys and sells and moves? And
oh, wow. I don't know that for sure. I would say maybe 4 times.
Yeah, I would say. So
you have a starter home, a step-up home, the dream home,
right,
and the retirement home.
So statistically, I think it says you move about 11 times in your life, which includes like your college moves, you know that. But they said like good professionals might move up to 7 times. And that the reason I say that is because I've always talked about buying the house that's appropriate for you at your stage of life. And if you reach a little too far, it can put a strain on your budget. You can't take care of it. You can't have a great emergency fund, all those things. So yeah, it's pretty normal to like, so my point is if you're not buying the house you're hoping to buy someday, it's okay to buy what you can move to now. Mm-hmm. And real estate usually is an appreciating asset. So later on, it's worth more when you go to sell it. So hopefully.
Yep.
What do I need to be asking about right now in the market? What do I need to be asking about realtors? I mean, what's the thing I'm not asking about?
Well, you need to ask about how long it's going to take you to actually find that home. Because a lot of times you either have to sell something or you have to have a lease agreement. Can you get out of that if you find something quickly, or do you need to extend that? What type of down payment are you really going to need to get in? And what type of financing is going to be your best option?
So when you say I should talk, first you said I need to go to my lender, but mm-hmm. are you saying like I'm a buyer, so I should find myself a buyer's agent? And
I believe, yes, absolutely.
So don't just start looking at houses. Find a buyer agent. Somebody's going to work for me, with me.
Yes.
Understand what I can do, can't do, you know.
I've had some people come in, the first time home buyers, and we're putting them on a path. And after they've talked to me and we talk about all the steps and they talk to a lender, they figure out it's not the time for them to buy.
They're not ready yet.
They're not ready yet.
But they would know what the steps are to get ready.
Yes.
Maybe it's a year, 2 years, 5 years. Right?
Yes. And it's a process to get there and get ready. And I tell everybody, when it sounds great and you want to buy the house and payments are usually still going to be less than rent in our area. Not every area, but definitely right. in our area to get what you want. However, you don't want to bite off more than, you don't want to be house poor. I never encourage my clients to be house poor. I want them to buy something they know they can afford and they won't regret it 6 months down the road and not spend more than they can really sustain, because buying the house is one thing, but maintaining it is the other.
Yeah. And hopefully these are long-term decisions. Hopefully you're staying there like at least 3 to 5 years, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, I mean, statistically in a lot of our small towns, we live in our houses a lot longer than that. Some people like to move. I don't like to move, but, so hopefully it's, you know, at least suits your lifestyle for the next 3 to 5 years. Right. And so, I think though, at least on our side, on the build side, the remodel side, it's very emotional. I'm sure the buy side, it's emotional too. And so you want to know your guardrails before you go look at that first house, and you know, the emotions kick up and then the sense of urgency kicks up and you maybe make a mistake you really shouldn't have made, right?
Yeah. What I find is when they first get pre-qualified, they get very excited about shopping and they think, you know, maybe they're going to look at 5 or 6 houses and that one's going to drop in and they're going to get it. That's not true today. And I also tell people it's expensive to move. It's expensive to build.
Sure.
You don't want to just like it. You need to love that and see yourself there for a while. It is outside of 2021, maybe 2022. It's really hard to be in the world that my parents were in, where they could buy a house and 3 years later turn around and make money on it and get all their equity
right.
back out. That happened then, but it was a rare piece and it's not going to happen again, I don't think, for
a while.
Like
I said, there's a lot of expenses. But the other side of it, home ownership is a great tool to long-term wealth building. It's a great tool for stable communities. And, you know, that's when you own your home and you stay put, you move half as often if you own a home versus renting. So you tend to know the neighbors more, your kids know the schools more, you know, so there's upsides to it, but you need to make sure that fits your family and your lifestyle for the next, I say the minimum 3 to 5 years, but I'm not likely to, I was there the last place for 18 years. I'm not likely to.
I've been in my current house since 2002 and it's my second home in Mount Pleasant.
Exactly.
So, and I'm in the same neighborhood.
So, we're sitting here in our Mount Pleasant office right now talking. Our company is all across the state. People might hear this all across the state, but like what's our like median, either average or median home right now in our market?
So in Mount Pleasant, it's around 200,000.
200,000.
Yes. It's a little, I looked specifically in Gratiot County and Isabella County just to see. Gratiot County is a little closer to maybe 190, just a little bit smaller, and they sell fewer houses in that county in a year. But our house is currently taking into consideration that we have financing that's going to take 30 to 60 days, are on the market an average right now of about 75 days.
75 days.
Mm-hmm. Just getting shown, going through inspections, appraisals, and people making adjustments of the house they might have to sell or at least they have to get out of, so they're not having two payments.
So it's a long process too. Mm-hmm. Like, so you have, if you are a renter thinking of moving into your first time home or whatever, you need to be doing this months in advance of when it's move time.
Yes.
So that makes sense. What is your forecast on, I mean, pricing? Let's talk about pricing. The last few years, pricing has been wild. And by, I mean, like, fluctuating and ramps up. And I hear a lot of people say, oh, it's going to come down. And I'm saying, it doesn't come down as much as you think. Like the ramps up, it's like inflation that just doesn't seem to go away. Conditions have to get really unfavorable and supply would have to get too high for us to have prices come way down. What's your belief on that? What do you see?
I think they're going to stay strong. I think you
strong meaning they probably stay flat.
They're
going
to probably
increase.
Go 3 to 5% up
more
from previous years, but not. We had a 20% price jump in 2021. Houses just went crazy,
right?
And buyers went crazy. They were trying to get whatever they could get. Cash was abundant, so we weren't seeing a lot of financing. We were turning things over, and people were waiving appraisals. Some were waiving inspections. Just
right.
Here it is. Give it to me. I want it in a week, 2 weeks.
Right.
That's it. It's done. But I think they're staying steady. And when I do an analysis now, you know, I will go back maybe a year. That's already an adjusted price. So I can see that we can maybe move that up a little bit. But I have been surprised at some things that I've seen. Some over list price purchases in the last 3 or 4 months. So we may see more of that again this summer. The house that I mentioned down the street from me listed at 219 and sold for 230 in a day.
Right. So that's not that what the quote unquote pundits are saying, what I'm hearing about don't buy now. It's a terrible time. I'm like, I believe it's a great time still, even though it's hard, it's difficult. I don't believe long-term prices are coming down. I believe we have a shortage of houses. I think we're going to continue to. Michigan State Housing Development Authority says we're 190,000 houses short in Michigan. We built 15,000 homes last year. 20 years ago, we were building 50,000 homes. We're not supplying more for the people we have. So I don't think it's going to get easier to buy a home in the short term.
No, it's not going to get easier. And we've asked, is there any development coming in Mount Pleasant to give us more houses? But
well, let's talk about that. I don't think there is. And let me tell you why. The what people can afford in Mount Pleasant, based on the jobs, the average family income, for our company, we really don't believe we can build a house for less than $500,000. That's the ground zero for really good house, right?
But, right.
And if you see these others on the market, and I won't name their names, but there's good builders that build more speculative housing for sale, right, in these neighborhoods. They're in the 400 range. They're in the high threes, low 400s.
Right.
And I'll be honest, they're not moving quickly, for one, but they also are not making money at it. I mean, I know these builders. I know the people that hold the land, and there's no meat on the bone there for them to drop 50,000 off. There's just not. So I don't see a lot of development because, frankly, if there was, we'd be all over it. We'd build 20 more houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's not because the cost of construction is way higher than the cost of buying one right now. And so even though you feel like that $200,000 house is too expensive or that $300,000, it's a deal.
I mean, oh, it is.
It is a deal. And not the house that I sold, I built 18 years ago. I honestly, if I built that for somebody else, knowing what's in it, knowing what I have, I mean, we had the pool, we had the irrigation, all the stuff, you know, the triple pane windows, because of course, as a builder, I mean, that's a $750,000+ house, and we sold it for less than $500,000. That young couple got a great deal in my mind, but that's what the market was worth. When we sold it, we had to sell it for what the market was worth, not what it cost to replace. So that's why you're not seeing development, unfortunately. And we're just doing things to add to the cost of the house every day.
Well, part of that also is if you are a buyer and you can get yourself into that home, that $400,000 home, you very rarely have 20% down. And that's what they need with a lot of building.
Right.
We talk to the lenders, why aren't people building? And a lot of it has to do with the appraised value, the cost to build right now, their down payment isn't enough. So the spec homes can sell because they're already built. The risk is gone. They can come in with 5% down, 10% down, and they can buy that new home. And I don't mean this as any offense to any builder in this area, but there are people who build to live in their home and people in houses that are built to sell.
Absolutely.
Different, completely different. And if you are a client of mine, you'll laugh if you hear this, because they know when I go through, and I'm especially looking at a high-end home, my big thing is solid doors. If I have a client that's buying a $500,000 home, I'd like to see them have some solid doors in their house and not So I look at those things and I look at the nail holes. Are they caulked? We want the expectation that goes with a $500,000 house. So, but that's kind of a joke, because they'll look and they're like, hey, Shelly, look at the doors. And somebody just spent that extra to upgrade that house a little bit.
And when we talk about the cost of construction, that's what we're talking about in our $500,000 homes. We, you know, there's those things that we believe are non-negotiable, as, you know, high-end quality at last. We've historically built for people who are the move-up buyers, the last-time buyers. They know what services they know what they want. Yeah. So no offense. Even builders, they know who their target audience is, right? So, and the other thing is, talking about that for financing, the reason you're not seeing a lot is we find that we have to find people with a lot of cash to build.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So even if they need to finance, the appraisal is going to come in lower than our estimate, and they're going to have to be okay with that. We tell them right up front. And so little secret, we do probably 150 jobs a year throughout Michigan. We've probably done 3 finance jobs in 15 years.
Okay.
So we have to find cash people, because most people that need financing don't have 50% down. And if you already need 20% down, your estimate comes in or your appraisal comes in 30% under my estimate, you're going to be putting like 50% down, you know, or some ridiculous number to a lot of people. So generally we work for people that don't need the financing, I guess I'd say. So we do occasionally, but so I think that that's not the answer for a lot of people, the building route.
No.
And so you kind of get thrown back in this pool of, well, here's what's available. Right.
Right.
So that's a tough thing. Why we're not building in Mount Pleasant a whole lot of more development. I think it's only going to get worse. You're not seeing lots developed. You know, with interest rate on AD&C financing right now at the 8-9% mark, I don't think you're going to see a lot of developers buying farm ground and developing it out.
No, for a while. The interest rate is really a lot of what happened to us as well, is why we aren't seeing as many houses come on the market. Because if you're already in the 4-bedroom, 2-bath home, and you're thinking of going to that next, like, this is the home, this is the dream home, this is where we want to go until we're going to retire, you start looking at your interest rate, and you don't want to give up the 3% for 6.5%.
Yeah.
And that has slowed down a lot of that step up buying.
So I don't know if it's still the same, but in January when I was with our economist, they told us that 84% of mortgages were at 4% or less in America right now. I don't know what the statistic was on 3%. But yes, they said, you know, so many people, if they move, would have to double their interest rate that it's just unattractive for them.
Right.
The upside to builders is we've been remodeling. Because if you're in that place, maybe you just you need a bathroom, a kitchen, a roof, whatever, to make you happy. And so we've been doing an awful lot of that, which is, you know, good for us. We take care of that. But it definitely has been an interesting time. Historically speaking, this interest rate is not that bad. It's
Just
as compared to 3%. It's
horrible. We got really spoiled there for a while.
I mean, we're probably some, and I, this is, don't quote me on this, we're probably somewhere along the 50-year average for rates. I mean, I had rates at 10 and 12% when I was young. I mean, this is not that bad.
Right. No, I mean, some people had 18% on their first home.
Right.
My first home was in 87 here in Mount Pleasant. It was 8.5%. My second home, when I bought it in 2002, was 6.75%. So it's really very relative, but a lot of people had their budget set at 3%. They could buy a lot more house.
Right.
And so we encouraged everybody in the middle of that uptick in interest rates to get with their lender before we wrote any offer. And we also had deals fall apart because they bought a house and they had gotten out of their locked rate and they could no longer afford that payment.
Right.
It made a huge difference. And I had a couple of buyers on my listings had to walk away because of them.
I think, though, that, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but you, I think that if we truly are trimming down the interest rates over the period of the next 6 months, year, whatever, you know, as it trims down, I think that's going to cause more competition for the houses that, that do come available. Mm-hmm. And but it also may open up some people saying, okay, at this point, I will move. I will give up my 3% rate and go to 5%. I just wasn't willing to go 3 to 7, right? So, but I think it'll bring more buyers on than it will sellers. So I don't see the pressure on supply diminishing.
I don't either. Our industry is indicating that if it gets into 5, it's going to, everything's just going to go crazy.
I say we're off to
again.
The races.
Yep.
You know,
it's just really hard for a first-time home buyer to get into a decent house right now.
Correct.
If they come to me with a $125,000 budget, I can't get them much.
Right.
Not right now. Not, right. And a lot of first-time home buyers don't want to buy a fixer-upper, and or they just don't know how to do it. So they see it, and they can't.
And they have to be careful because it can get them in trouble. Because you know, there are some people that can put sweat equity in and it works out, but there are other people that can just make themselves some messes.
Yes,
you know, and then they get over their head and they hire people that maybe are not the most scrupulous, and then they're just in a mess. So no, you definitely don't want to go off and buy one that needs too much work unless you are ready for it.
Right.
So one thing that was neat to me, first time I went through when I sold my home, and I know we've had it maybe 4 or 5 years, is this time of transfer.
Okay.
So can we explain to our listeners a little bit about this time of transfer? Because it's going to be still new to a lot of people.
Yeah. It came about around 2019, and the Isabella Health Department, Isabella County Community Health Department, wanted to improve the water in our area. And they found that a lot of properties in more rural areas had insufficient or no drain field, no septic. Things were going into the river. Things were going into fields and ditches. Houses had been handed down from family to family, so nobody was questioning what was going on there. And a lot of things were old, and they weren't working the way they should be working. So they put into place the time of transfer, which really means at the time you transfer ownership of your home, you have to have had your well, septic, and water and drain field inspected by a representative of the health department, not just anybody. And they'll tell you, yes, you can now transfer this home to someone new. It's past everything we want it to do. Or no, and these are the repairs you need to make. And once those are repaired, then either a picture can be sent in to them or they'll go out and inspect it and make sure it's been repaired. And they're hoping to clean up the environment and also It is a good protection for the buyer going in that they don't have to replace a drain field a year in when they don't have an extra $10,000.
So it's a double-edged sword because they're looking at the septic conditions. So this is not if you're in city sewer, but the septic conditions, mm-hmm. they all test the water, the quality of the water in the well.
Yep.
So it's a double-edged sword because if it is a home that is of the lower dollar value in this time of transfer inspection takes place, finds a problem with the septic, then the seller has the obligation to bring that up to whatever the requirements are, which may be a new septic, whatever. The downside to the seller is you don't get to pawn off stuff on the buyer, right? That might be a problem. The upside to the buyer is you know you have a system that at least at this time meets the requirements and will function.
Yes.
So you don't get into that $150,000 home that's already kind of a stretch and find out in a year that you need a $15,000 septic overhaul or you have to find the cash. So there's an upside. The downside is it takes a little time. So again, when we did our pre-sale inspection with Mr. Roman, He's a, I don't know what you call it, certified person.
I've worked with Dave.
So he did all of the septic. We pumped the septic tank. He like dug up pieces of the field. He inspected the rocks. He sent the water quality samples off. So we were able to present that to our buyers or potential buyers at the time. Like it, we took care of it. And I don't remember what he charged me. It was a few hundred dollars. I don't remember exactly. Right. But then I had to pay the septic pumping and blah, blah. But so yeah, it's kind of neat. It's good. It's a win for the environment long term, which I don't know anybody that hates the environment enough to do bad things to it. It's a win for the buyers, although there is some expense for the sellers potentially. Yep. And so it makes sure there's some burdensome stuff during your tenure of helping them that you have to negotiate through once in a while, because certainly out in farm country, we do see a lot of septics that are not quite up to snuff for you.
We saw some houses that had to just end their sale. They couldn't, no one could negotiate who was going to pay for it.
Right.
So a buyer doesn't want to put any money up front on a house that they may not end up being in. A seller may not have the money to fix it. The health department has gotten better about allowing us to work through some of that as they've gotten more familiar with the real estate industry as a whole through escrow and holding. A lot of the guys who are going to put in a new well, they understand that kind of how it works, and they're okay to submit their bills to closing and not have to have it up front.
Willing to hold on to it for a minute.
And they just have to hope that that deal doesn't fall apart for any other reason.
Right.
I can tell you that 5 years ago, I had a client, though, that had to put in a new well. It was about $4,500. Yeah. That same well today is going to be $8,000 to $9,000. That also has doubled. And when I talk to gentlemen in the industry, they're a lot like your industry. They don't have new people coming in.
Right.
And so they're getting so spread out, and it takes a while to get it done. They can't work in rainy weather. They can't get their big trucks in, so sometimes there's a delay in that. I coach my sellers that we don't list the house or put a price on the house until we have an idea of the quality of their septic well and drain.
So you think what we did, time of transfer, pre-inspection, is a good thing for sellers?
It's the only way I work with my sellers. I do not want a surprise 2 weeks before closing that the seller has to put in a new well and he doesn't have the money to do it. And they don't want that surprise. Right. So, and when we market it, I just had one. They've been there for 20 years. They don't really look at that stuff that much. They did the inspection. Then when I put the house on the market, I market it that time of transfer has been performed and certificates on file. Right. And it's good for 2 years.
Right, right.
So if that buyer, for any reason, has to sell, he doesn't have to have it redone.
Right.
In that 2 year period. And if you've had the septic pumped and it during inspection, they say you don't need to have it pumped and you can show that it's been done in the last 5 years, you don't have to spend that money.
Yeah.
Again.
So that's interesting. I know a gentleman that runs one of the pumping operations here, and I think he called it like mandatory reporting. If he pumps a tank and it has effluent flowing back out of the field, he has to notify the health department.
Yeah. Or if the lid's bad.
So there, you know, you're just not getting away with as much of that as you were in the old days. So, which is not all bad, but, you know, I don't know what time we are. We got to be in the mid 20s and I've got more questions. Could you maybe hang on with me? I want to talk about this, NARI thing out there that, is where there's been some landmark, changes in the industry and buyers and sellers are paying for their own agency fees and stuff. Can we like put a cap on this one and start another one here in a few minutes?
Absolutely.
And then we can do perfect. Well, Shelly, it's been great talking to you. This is Colin with Greenwald in BC. We've brought you another expert in the industry, telling you all about the current industry for realtors. And so we hope you've valued this time. I'm going to cut it off and we will start another one here in a minute. And we'll talk about what this new buyers and sellers fees are going to be, how that came about, and what we're going to do to help those folks out. So again, Colin here in Greenwald in BC. This is Shelly Kimmerling, Cobalt Banker, Mount Pleasant Realty. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of What the Builder Knows.